going to have to leave it there. I thank you so much, Middle East correspondent for The Independent.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 7:59 a.m. At the top of the hour, we have More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste. Stay tuned.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month, we'll host the third annual Dia de los Muertos celebration on Thursday, October 10th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. We'll be showing short films recognizing the traditional practices and beliefs of El Dia de los Muertos as practiced in Mexico, Ecuador, Nicaragua, and Bolivia. We'll also have dancing, food, and music to honor our beloved dead. Again, that's the third annual Dia de los Muertos celebration on Thursday, October 10th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of a talk by Alex Vitale on Saturday, October 12th at the Dismantle Change Build Center in Portland. Alex Vitale, director of the Brooklyn College Policing and Social Justice Project, is the author of The End of Policing. He'll be speaking on how to reconstruct police culture and behavior and describe alternatives that remove the police from dealing with drug addiction, houselessness, sex work, mental health crises, and more. Again, that's Alex Vitale on Saturday, October 12th, 6 p.m. at the Dismantle Change Build Center, 14 Northeast Killingsworth in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You are listening to More Talk Radio on KBOOF.FM, 90.7 in Portland, 104.3 in Corvallis, 91.9 in Hood River, and KBOO.FM via the World Wide Web. Today is Monday, October 7th. My name is Cecil Prescott, and I greet you on this Monday morning, if you're listening live. If you're listening not live, it's another day or another hour. But it could be like the Twilight Zone. But in any case, we welcome you. And let me give you our phone numbers, to join in our conversation. 503-231-8187. And that's an opportunity for you to participate in our morning conversation. A concern and issue that Celeste and I would like to share with you, and we will have a discussion and a debate, because I think we have Celeste and I, we disagree on some issues on this subject. And this is in regards to the Botham Jean young man who was murdered by a policewoman. She was subsequently found guilty and sentenced to 10 years in prison. Several things have happened surrounding this case. Most recently, a witness for the prosecution who lived next in the apartment complex across from Botham Jean, and Joshua Brown was murdered this weekend. And that leads to a lot of speculation. But also we want to talk particularly about and so what we wanted to do is to talk about the nature of forgiveness. Now, many of you have heard of the moving testimony, I guess, of his brother who took the stand and and in that he many of you have seen the video, gave this dramatic pause asking for may he hug her and offer his forgiveness. Offered his forgiveness for killing his brother. Now, I don't know whether it was because of his testimony or not, but she was sentenced to 10 years in prison, which many thought was not an adequate sentence for the crime. The prosecution wanted more years added to her sentence, but be that as it may, was not offered, and she will be sentenced to 10 years in prison. The controversy is the nature of forgiveness. So often we see how those who are victims and are given the opportunity to offer forgiveness to those who have hurt them. And we've seen this played out many ways in our nations, in the United States of America's nation's life, of victims of violence, of assault, offering forgiveness, pardon to those who have harmed them or their loved ones. So a question for us today, and we will expand this conversation, is what is the nature of forgiveness? For me, when I saw that video, I said, oh no, here we go again. As is often the case, those who are victims are placed into center and they offer forgiveness to those who have done harmful things to them and their community. And why is it, Celeste, and I, as we spoke last night, why is it that it seems that there's such a emphasis on focusing on why people who are hurt offer forgiveness to those who have victimized them? So whether it, we see it in this case, we saw the case of the mass shooting of the black church a couple of years ago by the white supremacists who came into the church building in the during the church service of Bible study, shot and killed many people, and what we saw movingly were victims and all their families offering forgiveness to the murderer. It's often the case, I think, that victims are are raised up and say, oh, what a wonderful thing they've done to offer forgiveness. The question for me is, what is the nature of forgiveness? What is the relation between forgiveness and justice or restorative justice, which we'll define later? And what are the roles that people ought to play when they are victims, or when they are those who are the people who have committed the crimes? Do we further victimize those who are injured by promoting the attitude that they should forgive and or forget and or move on? That's a question for me. What do you think? Our number is 503-231-8187. We're talking about the case of has many dimensions of the young man who was killed by a police officer in uniform who entered into his apartment, who according to the murderer thought she was entering her own apartment, was on the wrong floor, the apartment was different, there wasn't a floor mat or something. But a lot of confusion. A point is that his younger brother took the stand and asked for forgiveness. Not asked for forgiveness, offered forgiveness to his brother's murderer. Many dimensions. Racial dimensions, police, community relations. What are the roles of those who are victims and those who are the people who commit hideous crimes? Where do we stand? And so I ask you for your wisdom, because we need to hear from one another. How do you consider ways in which to respond to either those who have victimized you, or you see those who have been victimized? What is the proper response? Is there a cry for justice and then forgiveness, whatever that means? Or do we offer forgiveness, and whatever that means, and then proceed to justice? In a world, in a society where there seems to be so polarized, in one sense, it seems to me that those who are able to offer another way of transforming strife by offering the moral high ground, as it may be, forgiveness and wholeness. Is that the way to proceed? It's difficult begin and look at individual cases, and whether or not a person may or is able to offer forgiveness to someone else. But what about in terms of larger issues, when you look at communities who have historically been oppressed by others, societies here in this country, whether or not the offer of forgiveness is necessary or a possibility? What do we do about the legacy of oppression in our country, and how do we move on? Let's hear your thoughts. 503-231-8187, and let me ask you a question. Have you ever offered forgiveness to someone, and why or why not? Let's go to our first caller, and they'll respond to the question. What do you think about offering forgiveness? either as an individual or as a community. Let's go to Lou. Good morning, sir.
You can just call me Lou. It's fine. You don't need the titles, ma'am, sir, or stuff like that. Well, I think you're asking an interesting conundrum category of questions.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of moral, legal, and what constitutes justice. I think in the case that you're citing, in terms of training, I think the police officers in general, and this could be globally, not just the United States, mm-hmm. are trained to respond a certain way. In that specific case, it sounded like whatever the personal psychology experience circumstances of the white woman officer, she was kind of trained to shoot to kill. So that sounded like what she wound up doing.
Yes.
And then there's, you know a lot more about this as a minister with the United Church of Christ, the tradition of forgiveness. So that, and it sounds like there's been a controversy in this case of, and you also cited the Charleston church shooting, because it mm-hmm. sounded like the black parishioners there, they said, well, we forgive, or the families that survived, or the people that survived said, well, we forgive the shooter because this is our tradition and our religious belief.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if those two trainings mean that if you're imbued with the training of the police department, or plural, or you're imbued with the training of that particular, and it's probably in other religions too, not just Christianity, mm-hmm. of forgiveness, then you're going to be comfortable with both sides. So people would say, because the police officer showed remorse in the trial and cried and was embraced by, I guess, the brother of the victim, the first victim, that's a mitigating factor in terms of the severity of the punishment. Mm-hmm. Whereas the protesters, probably like in Ferguson and lots of other places, would say, no, this is another case of the police getting off scot-free. And so that vision of justice is there needs to be much more accountability when there's what I thought you mentioned, Cecil, the second category, which is the historical global groups who've been oppressed. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what a good question to ask you back is about that. It sounds like
let me ask you in terms of you made that distinction, I think, in terms of the individual and this police officer who showed some sort of sense of grief or sorrow,
crying,
which is different than the Charleston case you mentioned in
sure.
terms of the attacker. He certainly showed no remorse. No,
right.
and in fact, I'm sure it's just the opposite.
He, right.
Yeah. So is it because she said I'm sorry that was different than the forgiveness that the Charleston parishioners offered, even though that in that latter case the murderer did not show any signs of remorse.
Correct. Well, no, that's a good question. Of course, these are philosophy, existential, and what would you call it? Religious ethics sorts of questions. In terms of organizing, the other question you asked before, which I probably should address, is have I individually forgiven someone? And because I'm not really in, like, we didn't really grow up in a religious tradition, my individual experience or training is organizing. And organizing tends to be like a bunch of us from Portland State at City Hall a couple of years ago, we're all shouting, Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. And in organizing, you would tend to argue that forgiveness is not such a good tactic, even though for you as a minister, that might contradict your particular Christian tradition. So I don't know if that helps answer either of your two questions.
you know, what else can we talk about at 8:15 in the morning? Yeah, it becomes problematic to me, and I appreciate you offering
to delve into what you're asking. Yeah.
Offering this perspective of an organizer, and that's something that continues. I don't know. So
well, it's just, I would just say that in letting you go, mm-hmm. that if you're the specific victim of sex crime or rape, or your brother was murdered, there's far more likelihood that you either don't have attrition at all, or your attrition is, well, we want to retaliate. And that would be like religious wars in Northern Ireland or the Middle East, perhaps. Anyway, so I should let you go. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, thank you so much. Our number's here, 503-231-8187. And our last caller shared his thoughts about the nature of forgiveness. How is it possible? He was also able to makes a distinction between an individual who offers forgiveness of something committed against themselves, as opposed to a community or organizing. Those things are different. One thing we have not said is offer a definition of forgiveness. What does that mean? What do people mean? Last caller mentioned those of religious tradition where that term is very important in many religious tradition, forgiveness. But again, that's one word that we toss out, and I'm not sure we have a common definition of what it means, which might be a problem. Be a problem in our ability to come to a not only a common understanding, but to move forward. What's the role of forgiveness in the movement for social justice? Give us your thoughts. 503-231-8187. Is it okay for the brother of Botham Jean to offer forgiveness to the person who murdered his brother? The last caller reminded us that the murderer seemed to be, I don't want to use another term, repentant, but seems to have been very sorry for what she did. Contrast that with the community in Charleston, South Carolina, where a racist came in and shot a group of people in a black church, and that community offered, many members of that community offered forgiveness to the murderer, even though, unlike the Botham Jean case, the murderer in the Charleston shooting did not show any signs of remorse, and indeed probably thought the shooting of those people should have earned him a badge of honor. How do you conduct yourself in your ordinary lives? What's the role of forgiveness? And as the last caller suggested, we might want to expand the conversation in terms of movement and organizing. What's the role of forgiveness? 503-231-8187. Last caller mentioned the role of religion and morality play in many social justice movements, and we certainly are well aware of those either in this country and indeed in worldwide, in the role of the movement for justice and freedom for all people. An example, not in this country, but one in which many of us are all familiar with, is the transformation in South Africa, and that nation's transformation. Many of may be aware of the transformation of the ANC, the African National Congress, and how their leaders, their movement transformed over the decades of their movement to get rid of apartheid. Began first as a nonviolent justice movement. At some point, the ANC thought that they needed to take up arms, became an armed rebellion. Later on, as the leader Nelson, a leader, Nelson Mandela, who spent 28 years, I think, in prison. When he came out, when he was released from prison and negotiated the settlement with the white authoritarian regime, modeled for many people a way in which to take on leadership and to transform that society. Many white people and in that community were afraid of the blacks gaining power because they might do to us what we did to them. But that was not the case. So that's an example on a mass social movement skill of the role of forgiveness and and the other example we offer this morning was the individual of Botham Jean's brother. Our numbers are 503-231-8187, and we believe Rosalie has some wisdom to offer to us. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. I'm not sure if I have any wisdom to offer, but I wanted to, I was thinking about forgiveness and my children, and you know, when you're raising children, the expectation you have of behavior from them, and yeah, when that behavior just doesn't happen, and often if one child has done something to another child, what is the expectation? And our expectation is often to find some sort of I'm sorry in it. And my observation is that often children aren't ready to do that at the moment that we want them to do that. So I'm thinking about this other story when it involves the murder of someone by a police officer. The beauty that the brother can forgive the police officer. Also, because I don't know that police officer personally, I often wonder about the regret that's involved with that action. Is she, at that moment, the emotion that she's expressing, no doubt it's about that she took a life, but sometimes I wonder, just looking at my children.
Children, yeah.
It's often that they regret the punishment that is going to come to them.
Right.
I'm not sure if
they're or the getting caught itself.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if they're evolved enough sometimes, or mature enough to be at a place where they really can accept the implications of their actions. And that's what it makes me wonder about this police officer and many police officers. Sometimes you have a very hard road to walk if you have, because of your behavior, the implications are so vast, as in taking another person's life. So to be able to forgive that person is wonderful, but that person still needs to carry a much heavier load, regardless if they've been forgiven.
In addition to that, the question also is, what will they do to fill the vacuum that's been left by that person? And so, you know, a lot of people have condemned or criticized the young brother for forgiving his brother's killer. And I separate out her role as a police officer in that he looks at another human being. And we should look at each other's human beings in that case so that we can see how that compassion is warranted and how that compassion is offered. I think for some of us who are upset with him having forgiven her, they're not seeing through his eyes. They're not recognizing that he's looking at a different dynamic. And kids don't have that level of empathy yet. They haven't developed that. And we hope as adults we have.
Yeah, and I agree as well. I always think in terms of Batman, wow, the strength, and like talk about being evolved to be able to get to that place. And that's his road. That's his path to follow, and far be it from me to have any judgment on another human being who perhaps is more evolved than I am in terms of forgiveness.
Right. Could you share, if you could, what do you mean by forgiveness?
Yes.
That's a term we use. I'm just curious, what is forgiveness for you?
Forgiveness for me is, I think you have to forgive yourself. But in forgiving yourself, you have to admit to what you've done, and that means you have to be able to look at all facets of whatever it is, taking a baseball bat and hitting your little brother, tearing up your sister's paper, something like that. Where did that come from? So for that woman, where did all of that come from? She's got to go really far back, I think, to figure out how she got to that point that she could shoot another human being who's sitting on a couch. That's pretty shocking.
So
to me, you've got to go really deep within yourself to truthfully look at yourself to see where you came to, whatever action it is that you need to account for, that you need to forgive.
So when the and that's helpful for me, because it says what the person has to go through, who was the one who committed the crime. What do you think that the brother meant, or what do you mean when you say to someone, "I forgive you"? What change happens in you, and what change do you expect in someone else when you say, "I forgive you"?
That you've been able to look at the pain and your own pain even. Mm-hmm. And you've been able to accept that and say, you know what, I can live with this, and I'm able to forgive the other person for whatever pain that I am experiencing.
Mm.
You've been able to forgive them of whatever is pain. I don't want to say their lack.
Yeah.
But able to forgive them of whatever it is, like thinking of my children, the fact that one of my children, how he expresses his anger is painful to his siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And that my other children are able to separate themselves from that to say, I know he doesn't mean me harm. He actually is unable to express his anger in a better way.
Very good.
That's a very simplistic way of looking at it.
Very simplistic, but no, I think it's very deep. Hey, thank you.
It's fundamental, is what it is, you know.
Yeah.
In a positive sense, we would say basic, meaning it's the foundation, you know, it's the base of how we would not only conceptualize it, but express it. And I think it's also one of the best ways to get young people to understand the importance of forgiveness, not only for the other person, but for themselves. But so, thank you so much, Rosalie.
Thank you. I appreciate listening and learning from both of you.
Oh, well, it's a mutual exchange. Let me put it that way.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. So, you know, one of the things that I found fascinating is how so much of our lives are politicized when perhaps they shouldn't be politicized. Mm-hmm. So his being forgiving has been criticized by people who are looking at it, I think, only through a lens or two, you know, a facet or two aspect. I can see why people are upset that it was only a 10-year sentence, you know, and how can the family get any satisfaction out of that? I think when we view and characterize hurtful dynamics or painful, I should say, dynamics only through our idea of what is fair, we limit not only the capacity for the people who have been wounded by this to get past that moment. You know, we avert their gaze from whatever beatific thing they're looking at to a hurtful thing, mm-hmm. you know. But it also limits our ability to see a more profound and transformative dynamic that occurs when somebody is moving toward forgiveness.
Right.
Does that make sense?
It does. I think it does. Yeah. What is forgiveness? How do we forgive? All numbers here are 503-231-8187. Is there a difference between an individual forgiven and societal forgiveness? And again, what do you mean when we say forgiveness?
Yeah.
Let's go to Michael. Michael, thank you for waiting.
Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yeah, you know, I think that whole act was contrived.
You're not the only person to say that. Tell me more.
Well, because, you know, he had a platform. The whole world was watching.
Oh, well, true.
So he somehow wanted to be viewed as this magnanimous type of individual. And plus, I don't think it was his forgiveness to give, because he didn't suffer the penalty of death. So it was easier for him to contrive this whole situation.
So you mean he didn't suffer the penalty of losing his brother?
No, he didn't die.
Oh, he didn't. Well,
he didn't die.
Well, yeah. I mean, you raise a good point, but at the same time, he lost something. You know, he lost the love of his brother.
Well, we're assuming, you know, we're making some assumptions here. We're assuming that him and his brother was close. Mm-hmm. Maybe they wasn't. Mm-hmm. We're assuming because there are siblings that's not close. Mm-hmm. So we're reading into this.
Yeah.
Plus, you know, I don't know. Let me go back to the Bible. The Bible is full of judgment. That's what the whole Bible is.
Well, it's also about love and forgiveness, too, though. Don't forget that. But go ahead.
Yeah, it is about love and forgiveness, but it's also about judgment. We don't get out of this world without paying a cost at some point. After death is left judgment. I don't buy into that. I don't know why black people, we're the only race of people on the planet that react to things differently than other races of people.
You said something that's really important. You said we react differently. First, tell us what you mean by that differently, and then why you think that. Because you're not the only person has said that. And, you know, if this was an hour and a half conversation, we would get into that, because that's part of what we were talking about by politicizing what Cecil meant earlier. Because when the black parishioners in the church forgave, a lot of people said, well, gee, that was easy. You just let that racist Dylan Wolf off the hook. And, you know, I thought both ways. I thought, well, yeah, you let them off the hook, but also spiritually you let yourselves off the hook. But tell us what you were thinking.
I'm thinking the same thing. You know, that example of the church shooting, this example here, I mean, I'm sure there's other examples, and black people are the only group of people that I know of that do this. I don't see the other groups of people that suffer massacre.
And why do you think black people do that? What's in our DNA or whatever?
I'd like to think it's a superior DNA myself.
I think it has a lot to do with that whole slave experience.
So Stockholm syndrome, you think? You know, where you start identifying with your oppressor and, you know, seeing it through the oppressor's eyes instead of your own? You think that's what it is?
Well, I just think that we suffered more. Mm-hmm. So what we suffered, and, you know, we lost the loss of our language, our culture, just that whole slave experience.
Continent, in a sense.
It's the way how we survive, I guess.
you know, have brought us to this point where we people just do us wrong, and somehow we feel like we got to come out and forgive them. I mean, I just, no other race of people is doing it. You ask me why.
Okay, so, but I mean, right. Don't go, because you brought up some good points. Like I said, if we had more time, I would love to get into that, because the whole thing is, it's as though we feel so cowed, we will take anything, you know. And I think that what we do is a combination of that sometimes, but I'd like to think that it's more a sense of a superior ability to recognize the spiritual dimensions of things. Now, people are saying, well, spiritual dimensions don't put money in the bank, or don't feed, or don't keep your body from hurting if you're getting beat by, you know, a baton. And, you know, but, you know, I agree with you in that there's a spiritual dimension to this whole existence, this whole experience we call life, and that we have to respond to what we see here in this here and now, this reality, with a deeper sense of understanding. Your phone not cooperating, is it, Cecil? You know, go ahead, Michael.
But you know, I've listened to white commentators react to this forgiveness and this shooting, and every white commentator said they wouldn't, if they was in that situation, they wouldn't. They don't feel they could have done that. You know, it's just black people. I don't know why black people feel like we have to do these types of things to be liked. Are we trying to be liked?
I don't think so. I thought about that. I thought about that too, and it occurred to me.
Please,
Massa. We don't. You know, you don't have to beat us no more. We gonna be good. No, you know, like I thought about that, and I had to. Okay, this is just for me. I'm not telling you got to do this, Michael. But I'm saying I had to reject that. Because white culture, especially white supremacy, doesn't care whether we cooperate or like them or fawn at their feet or nothing. Whether we fight them back or whether we talk, you know, as equals, or whether we come subservient, the response is always going to be the same. They don't care. We're going to be oppressed. You know, and so I look to my spiritual health as a way of dealing with the harsh physical reality. And there will be some people who say, well, you know, that's foolish of you, because there is no world beyond this. And, you know, to which I say, well, you know, that's merely your opinion. You don't know, because you haven't died and come back, you know. But I kind of think that also white supremacy doesn't allow for seeing itself as wrong. So of course it's going to say, well, I wouldn't do that. Well, of course you wouldn't, because you think of yourself as on top, so you're going to try to get back at anybody who upsets your apple cart. So no, I wouldn't expect anybody who has a perspective that is rooted in white supremacy to be able to understand it, nor would I expect anybody who has a temporal view, a temporary view of this life, to understand it. But I still get you. But okay, so how do you balance your Christian belief then? Because you have said many times you have a Christian background. How do you balance that with the concept of and the act of forgiveness? Does that become difficult sometime as a black person?
Yeah, it do. It becomes difficult, because there's a political side of me.
Yes.
And fights with the religious side of me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so today I'm talking political, because
yeah, I feel you.
Yeah, you know, that's the political side of me. But yeah, I know what the Bible say about spiritual warfare and all that stuff. But all I can do is look at examples in the Bible of other people that, you know, they didn't bow down. You know, they fought. They're oppressors, and they were religious people.
Yeah.
So why do we have to bow down?
We right. got to find that balance, you know. And right. and I will say this. I agree with you because there's days when I forget that I'm a spiritual person and I come I come hard, you know. You know, and I have to rein myself in and say, wait a minute, hold on now.
Jesus, forgive me, Lord.
But I feel you, and thank you for bringing that up.
All right.
Hey, thank you, Michael. You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO-FM. Our number's here, 503-231-8187. We're talking about the nature of forgiveness, political, personal, religious. Focus began on the Bothan Jean.
That's how I was saying it. Bothan Jean or Bothan Jean. You know,
from Saint Vincent. So I said, well, whatever.
Hey,
both of
them. Yeah, both of them.
Let's go to Trudy.
Good morning, Trudy.
Hi. Thanks. I really appreciate being able to talk about this. I've been thinking about this almost continuously for the last few days because I watched the court TV entire proceeding.
Ooh, you are a stronger person than I am. I couldn't do it. I had to follow in various sources because I was afraid I would get too overwhelmed by either perspective.
Yeah, well, the hardest moment for me was every sentence that Brant was saying. I was wincing and clenching and hoping he wouldn't say the next sentence. And then when he asked to hug her, I was screaming inside, no, don't hug her.
Yeah.
And so I've had a lot to reflect on, you know, what that all meant. You know, you asked, what is the nature of forgiveness? What is it? And I think I've only experienced it in a profound way just once, you know, as opposed to the kind of forgiveness that you shouldn't do, like keep forgiving people who keep harming you and then they come do it again, you know, but in a profound way only once. And so when you asked how do we do that in our own lives, I have no idea. It just fell upon me. I didn't ask for it. It wasn't based on religion or faith. It just happened with my father, who had, you know, done great harm to me. But, you know, I think I want to focus more on Brant's forgiveness in this specific case. And what it means, because of the racial backdrop of this, you know, rather, I don't think, you know, I feel like right now I can talk about that, separate that, you know, because what caused me, I knew that the reason I was having such a hard time with it while he was doing it was I knew it would be politicized, just as, you know, forgiveness with Dylann Roof was politicized, so that white people in the media have exploited, or, and I don't mean all white people, but have exploited or interpreted this in ways that seem intended at the bottom of it to silence or judge other ways of expressing anger, anguish, outrage, grief.
As if to stifle black grief or black rage at being mistreated, and to say this is the only way you can respond. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, and that it seems to cancel out or detract from the need for police reform.
There you go.
You know, as if the message is, be like Brant, be like the parishioners in the case of Dylann Roof. You know, don't be like Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
Engage in healing, not your anger. You know, so to see the Fox Network people do this, is to, you know, if you just cringe and squirm, and all the media playing that beautiful young man over and over, they're it's all for the wrong reasons to jump on this.
And I think we need to recognize he is a young man. What, he's 18 years old or something like that?
17, 18, something like that. So he's young, but at the same time, I'm thinking that's probably the most sincere form of a spiritual demonstration of it, because he is a young man and he's looking at these ideas. I mean, that's a time in life when people are developing an affinity for deep concepts and precepts of life. And so I looked at it and I saw innocence. You know, now I don't know his intentions. Now, he could be conniving. I don't know. But I took it as my being could accept it, you know. I don't think it should take away from the idea that we have value regardless of the fact that police oversight might be one thing. I mean, for me, it's more about human beings, and I'll say it, Black Lives Matter. You know, yeah. I see that as it, because the problem is that there is too much in white culture, and especially, again, I'll just say white supremacist culture, that mm-hmm. seeks to devalue Black lives in any way it can. So it's not just through policing, you know, and the policing dynamic. It's through so many ways, whether it's healthcare, whether it's income inequity, you know, whether it's housing opportunities or education opportunities, you know, we keep seeing ourselves devalued. And so they felt the need to politicize that so we would, like, simmer down.
Yeah, and in order to make the distinction, you know, like, Grant, that's the way Black people should be. They shouldn't be, like, angry people in the street.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, and on the one hand, see, I really, you mentioned his innocence and his sincerity. I truly believe that Brandt is a beautiful person who is embodying what he knew to be the spirit of his brother, mm-hmm. and that was really important for him to do. At the same time, you know, I think he had every right to find whatever possible response to his grief
yes.
that he had. That, yeah, that's
right.
his.
Yeah,
that's
and,
right.
You know, there's a distinction between the individual grief and the collective implications. There shouldn't be any contradiction between forgiveness and accountability.
Yes.
True, true. And I appreciate what you had to say and highlighting that Brandt, this is how he dealt with a primarily a personal tragedy in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his response. And you know, the other question about society, police training, how police are trained to shoot to kill,
mm-hmm.
that's something that needs to be dealt with. But at the same time, we need to appreciate and honor how this one young man dealt with this tragic event in his life.
Yeah. You know, and you know, you asked, is it okay? You know, earlier, you know, the question to everybody listening is it okay for him to offer forgiveness? And I got the sense that whether or not Amber was repentant, he would have forgiven her. You know,
yes, for himself.
So. Okay.
Well, thank you, Trudy. In closing, I wanted to make a comment on something you said about us as human beings forgiving someone and then they come back and do us harm again. Forgiving doesn't mean you have to keep yourself open to that harm. And that's one thing we need to remember, so that we're able to forgive. It is quite all right if somebody has harmed you, you can forgive them and say, well, it was a nice experience, and now you have shown me who you are, and I'm just going to move along, you know, whether it's all right with you or not. I'm moving along, you know, peace. You know,
exactly.
And we have to remember that we can leave that right relationship, that dynamic.
Yes.
We don't have to stay there and let them keep harming us.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to just say one more thing. That
really quickly, because we have another caller.
Oh, okay. So I can say it, or I should
yes,
go?
Yes,
just hurry up. Sorry.
Oh, okay, I will hurry up. I just wanted to say that what you just described, if everybody watched Allison, their beautiful mama, with what she said right after that, the victim statements to the press, then I think it, you know, you can ask and answer all these questions we've asked and answered, because she just held it all together, as there was no contradiction here mm-hmm. between her outrage and his forgiveness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and I just want to say that. But thank
yes.
you so much. I really appreciate being able to talk about this. It's a great topic. Thank you.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you, Trudy.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the metro area, 91.9 in White Salmon, east of Portland, in southern atmospheres, southern lands, southern territories. I had something in mind when I was
okay.
trying to say so. I
good
lost
south.
It. Anyway, in Point South,
south.
along the Willamette River Valley,
yeah.
It is 104.3 and KBOO on the internet. We're going to go to Rashawn. Good morning. Or is it Rashawn?
It's
Hello? Did we lose you, caller?
Oh, we might have lost.
No, I'm here.
Okay, good.
Yes,
hi.
It is Rahsaan. Thank you very much. Wonderful conversation. Just a couple of points. Forgiveness is a very, very evolved and heightened state. And when we can reach that, it's a beautiful thing. But a couple things need to be pointed out. The key witness in the case was murdered.
I can't get past that. Yeah. I'm still trying to find space to deal
with
that.
Well, let me give some light and context.
Mm-hmm.
That could have something to do with why the public display of forgiveness was given by the judge and the brother. That was highly inappropriate for a courtroom, and it is normally not allowed.
Thank you.
Cecil and I talked about that.
In this case, it was allowed.
Mm-hmm.
So it could have been, or what looks like, an act of fear that was displayed.
Mm.
And when we talk about forgiveness, there's an attachment to true forgiveness, and that is justice.
Yes.
So the question that has to be asked is, if we are receiving justice, and if the public displays of our acceptance of injustice is going to continue, our young people will never listen to the elders. They will never listen to conversations about forgiveness and Christianity and how we should turn the other cheek. We're very salty for that way of thinking, because this has been a very public display of disrespect.
Yeah.
And I don't want to allow us to put all of the moral weight on the act of forgiveness and overshadow the fact that this was the most insane murder that we have seen and heard of in quite a few decades, where a woman actually was able, and the media continues to say the line, mm-hmm. that she mistook this man's apartment for her own. They don't even tell you that the apartment that she's referring to, she had to go upstairs. So this is insanity, and we need to really focus on the injustices in the case rather than the act of forgiveness, which is very difficult for us all to comprehend or understand, except for the Christian context. And
well, Rahsaan, hold on for a minute. Let me interject something that kind of supports and undergirds what you're saying. If you recall, as the mother was leaving, and they said they don't plan on setting foot again, she talked about the corrupt system. She talked about the testimony being manipulated, how the crime scene was violated and manipulated, how proper protocol was not followed, and even just plain human dignity was ignored because Amber did not use her first aid kit to assist Botham. Just plain human decency was not rendered. And so what you're saying is very valid from those perspectives, but I also want to say this. What people don't realize is that young people in the Black community are very, 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 very tired. And they have seen generation on generation of oppression and not seeing any resolution to us as a culture,
ma'am,
and group,
ma'am,
showing
I would
response.
Have to stop you there as being a young one.
Mm-hmm.
No, we do see the resolution. We're very clear on what the resolution is.
What do you see as the resolution?
The resolution is it is a retaliatory climate that we are in.
Yes, we are. I'm agreeing with you on that.
Let me finish, please.
Yeah, I agree.
We cannot continue to allow our children and our best ones in our society to be slain because we are afraid that the system is going to or not going to give us justice. It becomes, at a certain point, when your life is threatened, you must defend your life.
Hey, that's going to be our last. That has to be our last word.
You know, but I hear you. We all hear you. And let's sit down and put the power in our hands.
That is what you have coming. And we are trying to warn society that, listen, we have to do right by this on all fronts.
Okay, and that'll have to be our last word. Thank you, Rahsaan.
All right, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
You know, I can't fault him, because actually he said it more forcefully than I was going to say it. You know, there has to be respect for the life. And if we're not showing respect for the life, then all these other societal posturings toward humanitarianism and what have you really have no meaning. You know, they're empty words. But let your words not be empty. Support community conversation here at your Community Connection, KBOO, Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 8:59 a.m. Next up is the Old Mo Variety Hour.
Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a public affairs director to manage public affairs programming, ensuring that it is of the highest quality and consistent with the KBOO programming charter. For this 32 hours position, we are looking for someone with production experience in community radio, who has communication and training skills, and the ability to work independently in a fast-paced work environment. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. Deadline to apply is Friday, October 25th at 5 p.m. More information can be found at kboo.fm/PADHire2019.
Oh, I wish there's a mole in the ground. Oh, I wish there's a mole in the ground. If there's a mole in the ground, then I'd root the mountains down. Oh, I wish there's a mole in the ground. Oh, I wish there's Johnnie's sunglasses. Oh, I wish there's Johnnie's sunglasses.